She is a district representative from Salt Lake and a former Alateen sponsor. I'll give you Lita L.
Hi, I'm Lita. Grateful Al-Anon. Gee, it's good to be here. Thanks for all your hospitality down here. It's just like coming home. That's good reason, because you all are my family, every one of you. Recently up at Salt Lake Elno Club, I walked in, this AA yelled at me. He said, uh-oh, here comes an enabler. He said, Lita, come sit by me. I haven't found a decent enabler all winter. So I said, well, yeah, but I've erred and strayed in my enabling ways. And then a young AA just laughed and he pointed a finger at me and he said, you come sit down here, but this time you see that you enable right. Well, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, I was enabling all the wrong ways. I was a pioneer in search of help. And I well recall, I just went to the phone. Are we going to try one more time? And I called my brother-in-law in Kansas City. He was a corporation executive, and my husband was a business executive, and they both drank heavily. But I couldn't talk. I just said, Paul, I can't last much longer. And Paul said, call this number. And then he hung up on me. This was the first time Paul and I had said a word since my twin's funeral a year before that. Well, the number he gave me was the cottage down there in Salt Lake City. And we often say we all come by different routes, but it was UAAs who brought me into the fellowship because he sent me down to listen to the AAs. And I did for quite a few weeks, and I couldn't come to believe whatsoever how very ill my family was, and I was. But they did convince me that I had choices. I went for that. Now, I'll give you for instance. The roof on our home was a sieve. It was, and had been for so long. And I had pleaded and nagged and shook my head. And the rings on the ceilings widened, and the shingles would just sail off in the canyon winds. And whenever we quarreled about it, my husband would just head for the nearest bar. But those AAs straightened me around. They said, Lita, you're just an enabler. You're only enabling the disease. So one morning, the mortgage company called. And the man informed me that our payments were 3 months overdue. He said, we can foreclose next week. You explain. I just stood there and took a deep breath. And you know, for the first time in years, I didn't cover. I didn't say, oh, I'll be right downtown with the payment. I couldn't believe my own ears. I just said, well, beats me. I don't know. My husband's drinking heavily, and he probably just forgot. Well, for a whole week, nothing happened, except that every night in my dreams, sheriffs haunted mothers, and they foreclosed on mothers just for the fun of it. And then one morning, I was standing stirring the oatmeal, and sure enough, here was this great big tall man right beside me, and he shoved a piece of paper right under my nose. And I trembled, and I closed my eyes. And the man said, are you daft? He said, choose a color. And I said, color? What for? And he said, for your new roof. The mortgage company had threatened to foreclose if they didn't see a new roof on that house that day, and my husband suddenly arranged the payments, too. So I was convinced about the wisdom of the AAs. There's a catch. It's one thing to replace a roof, and it's quite another to replace the fury and the fear that lies within for the true love and courage that you once knew. Living with an alcoholic was too much for Lita. And the cottage meetings petered out too. And then crisis followed crisis. And then the day of my father's funeral, my father-in-law's funeral, my husband walked out. After that, for weeks, my day was just to awake early after a round of nightmares, and I would sit, and then I would try to eat. I'd cry, pace the floor, cry some more until this terror just kind of subsided into a flood of quiet fear. And then I would sit and sit and sit. I was a woman in limbo. And then finally one snowy morning a friend called and she told me about Al-Anon, and God in his mercy sent me to the AA office for an Al-Anon schedule. An older woman smiled as I went in and she says, "Hi, I'm Arlene." She says, "You need something?" Boy, that was putting it mildly. Al-Anon was the last house on the street for me. I said, "Well, on the Al-Anon list, but I'm not sure what the problem is." But you know, down deep, I knew. And snow melted off my coat. I just stood there and let the surrender sink in. And Arlene smiled, and she handed me the schedule, and she says, "Now, whatever that problem is, I'll bet that you can't control it, and you didn't cause it, although you probably aggravated it, and you'll never cure it." And you know, as I walked back out, I felt warmed, as if by sunrise. And for the first time in a lot of years, I no longer felt alone. I'm grateful, too, for the adult children, Al-Anon's adult children. They've recently encouraged me, and it's the first time since I've been in the fellowship, to really think about my childhood in relation to all these mistaken attitudes and reactions that I had during my marriage, which went on for 25 years. So I'm going to talk a bit about my childhood. My mother abstained, as did her parents, as she grew up on a pioneer Kansas ranch. She was a history teacher in her youth, and she spoke well. But you just mentioned alcohol abuse to her, and she became fearful, and it was an unspeakable subject. If you pressed her, I only heard her say three things all the time I was growing up. She would say, "It's a taste in the beginning." Or she would say, "Strong drink is raging." This was usually the genuine conversation stopper, but if you really pushed her, she would gently say, "Judge not, lest thou be judged." And once I heard her say, "Well, if you must hang, hang not that drunken Indian who raped the white woman. Rather, you hang that white man that sold the rotten whiskey to that Indian." Now, although Kansas, I grew up there too, was a dry state, when I was a child, they said, "You can always count on a Kansan to vote dry as long as he can stagger to the polls." So my dad, a country doctor, was a bit more informed about alcohol abusers. He'd only say, though, "Their problems are beyond me. And anyone who would ruin their physiology like that." Now, like Utah, our Kansas town, enabling your family and your friends was just your way of life. But enablers make mistakes. And my parents made a dilly, and the adult children are quite familiar. They call it feeling stuffing. Now, in my home on our mantle, we had a statue that symbolized this feeling stuffing. There were three little monkeys, and the one monkey said, "Hear no evil." The other monkey said, "See no evil." And finally, "Speak no evil." And my parents practiced, and they demanded of their four daughters, my identical twin Leela and me, and my two little sisters, this feeling denial. It cost us. Still, we knew great joys as we enabled away amid the hardships as we grew up. We had insects, dust, tornadoes, epidemics, and the Great Depression. Then after Pearl Harbor, you really had to be tough, and you had to stuff to survive. By then, I was a freshman at Kansas University, and I closed my books only to stand on the curb and watch our men march off to battles. And then I'd rush home to sit and hold my dad's fevered hand. After his leukemia was diagnosed, he was never given more than 6 months to live during his next decade. And times grew tougher yet, his last 5 years when my mother succumbed to terminal cancer. For both, there was always the pain. But they shared strengths, and they enabled each other each day to the very last day of their days. And many times my dad felt more ill than those he served. But always, he intensely determined to be his own true self, a doctor with the courage to care and serve. So he managed, very much, just like our fellowship people here, to be there. And again, like UAA's, the man had his merry side. It was said of him that he could make a dying person laugh on their deathbed. And finally, like Dr. Bob, he always gave his creators credit for his healings. The night he died, however, the Kansas City TV said, "The state of Kansas has just lost one of its most skillful physicians and beloved leaders." In spite of war and grief, I graduated, and after a year at graduate school, I enabled the combat wounded in a military hospital as a social worker. And our unit was rather like MASH, long, long hours on the wards, and then we were off to the fort clubs. Oh boy, it was high time Lita played. And what's more, those clubs served 4 ounces of whiskey for 40 cents. Wow. And I loved that taste in the beginning. Unfortunately, when I tossed those glasses down, I ended up under the table any given night, or else in the shower of my BOQ, holding up those walls. They just wouldn't stand still for Lita. And you, my daughter says, "Well, you've heard of the wooden legs, Mother." She said, "You must have a tissue paper leg, because down through the years, you always end up in the john after a whiskey night." I returned to civilian life in more schools. And then I started suffering nightmares and depression. Now, I had lots of psychotherapy and that helped, but still life was rather disappointing for a 25-year-old woman. And then the most handsome Swede started to romance me. Oh, I loved his curly blonde hair. I loved his china blue eyes and his wide Kansas grin. And I especially loved the way he held me when we danced and said, "Shall we have a party?" So we always bought a bottle of whiskey to the parties. Say no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. And now are you ready for this? After all that straight arrow raising, my three sisters and I married dedicated drinkers, all destined to become heavy drinkers. Well, those men were very handsome. And they leapt from war into peace like triumphant warriors. And they excited. And they shared with us brilliant thinking. I'll give you a sample of my middle sister's husband, who we call Uncle Larry. And my twin, she was as funny as my dad. And she says, Uncle Larry, he won a scholarship. Or he was a Rhodes Scholar. Went over to Oxford University in England to study. And he took my sister with him. We didn't hear much from him. And then my twin said, "Well, I was minding my own business, walking into Southwest High School, which is your most prestigious high school in Kansas City." And she said, "What was I supposed to do? Bow out? Here's this life picture of Uncle Larry." It was our Uncle Larry. Well, he had just won a first, which is honors in Oxford, and he was the first Middle Western man ever to achieve this. And those boys were just full of surprises like this. And they wouldn't tell us. We'd just have to find out as best we could. They were exciting. My two little sisters' husbands then got PhDs at Harvard and became college professors back east. I didn't see too much of them after that. My twin and I, we kept the home fort out west, while our high-flying husbands went into the corporate struggles. I was there, and believe me, booze was everywhere, or so it seemed to us. And it was there on the college campuses as well as with the business boys. But we women, we just worked from sunups and into the night as our babies kept coming and coming and coming. And I really did hardly notice who drank what or how much, when on rare occasions, I could dress up in a low-cut cocktail gown and go to one of those parties, too. As for getting hooked, well, Doug being AA can tell you. He used to watch me in those days. When I tried to drink with my husband as he drank, I just can say, there for the grace of God, and my weak glands go I. It was about that time that there was a horse that joined my three little monkeys. My oldest daughter gave that animal the name. Her name's Lita Ann. She's now a nurse and a young mother out in Portland, Oregon. And she recently told me that while her father and I had managed to provide food, clothes, and a roof, well, kind of a roof, as she grew up, there was a horse on our dining room table. And that thing grew so fat on our family's colossal unmet need, the need to share reality. And we know tonight that Leanne's horse is called Denial. And that horse kept growing and growing for 20 years. As the disease of alcoholism progressed into our family, and Leanne and her brother and her little sister and her baby brother Joe simply grew up as best they could. Finally, when the booze clouds gathered and rolled through my family and my sister's family, it was just like a tornado that devastates abundance harvests back in Arkansas, and we suffered casualties. I was a walking wounded when I first sat mute in my first Al-Anon meeting. Not that I saw much wrong with me. It was those drinkers. And never mind that my own damaged physiology had left me shaking with fear. I was afraid of everything and everybody, but especially me, because I had traded my own true self for my mistaken self. And during the abuse in our home, I chose fight or flight. Either one, nothing else. For several years, I spent more time in a friend's home when I hid out with my dog, my young Joe, and myself. And when I fought, I resorted to all the same array of murderous weapons, which you are all too familiar. My favorite chore then was to dig dandelions. It was the only form of legalized murder that I knew. No longer could I sing in my choir, pray, or even think straight, and sometimes I was so preoccupied on how to sober up my middle sister Sarah and my husband that I drove several blocks past my own home before I realized I was home. I was always tired, but I lay awake at nights wondering where my teens were. Well, like me, they took off to their friends' homes. I showed them how. But I would pace the floor and plan funerals till they finally came home. Still, all I wanted from those Al-Anons was for my husband to come back home in bed with me, and this time sober. So when they read their steps, even a treasurer's report, and all they spoke about was themselves, they even asked me to share whatever for. In spite of my mistaken ways, those Al-Anons loved me. They accepted me, and they allowed me to crawl out of my shell at my own pace, and it was a very slow pace. And as I did crawl out of that shell, their love helped replace my fury, their courage, my fears. And meanwhile, Joe listened and shared an Alateen. He and his dog and I shared the brunt of the abuse. So when Joe began to smile once more and the dog sat wagging his tail at both of us, I could smile too. But it wasn't always easy. Sometimes I'd slip and I'd start to cry and yell, and Joe would say, "You can't lay your guilt trip on me, Mother. Get to a meeting." From your first meeting, Al-Anon gives you tools to rebuild. We've got this little bookmarker. I'm sure you all know about it. And it gives you guidelines. I'm going to pick one just to show you from my one day at a time bookmarker. It said, "Just for today, I will be happy." Abraham Lincoln says, "Most people are as happy as they make up their minds to be." When I first read that, I thought, no wonder that man got shot. But I determined to be happy. I don't have to tell you, things got better. My older teens resolutely decided to study and work their way through college, and so did I. I studied our 12 steps too, and that was when I really began to live them. And those 12 steps are still vital to my recovery. And that's why I feel everybody in this room is in my family, because you all go to those 12 steps, same as I do. Take, for instance, I'm just going to take step 4, for instance. My fearless, will it ever be fearless, I ask. I still ask that. Moral inventory. It first revealed my disastrous judgments. For instance, I'll talk about my judgments during my twins' demise. I like to say this about twins, and my Leela and I were identical. We were identical twins. Tolstoy said that happy families are all alike, and that's true of happy pairs, too. And Leela and I shared joys, and we helped each other, and we lived with each other like happy couples who have these close bonds that have been married for so many years that they even began to act like each other, you know, sometimes even almost look like each other. Well, these kind of joys attract other people. Ann Lander says, don't let them play their twinny tricks on you, you know, because she was a twin, too. But my twin and I never played twinny tricks, but we had things happen to us. And I'll use this for an example. Back in the early 60s, my twin and her husband then were high-flying, and I was one of the first to go down the road, you know, and lose the old self-image and all of that. The twin's still feeling real good. And I was just sitting in her kitchen, and I told her, I said, oh, well, you always were prettier, and I always thought that. And she's kind of the lead twin. And I said, you had the old charisma and everything. And I said, I've lost it all out there in Utah. And that's why she was. We didn't talk much. We didn't have to. We knew how each other felt. You know, like an old married couple. We were always that way. So we didn't say much. And finally, toward supper, she said, Paul was making about $70,000 a year, and she could afford a few treats now and then, you know. And she said, go down to my delicatessen. I just want treats for you, special treats. I want you to buy anything you want to in the store. I thought she could afford it, so I said, well, all right. And I went down there, and I just loaded up, and I got to the check counter. And proprietor said, Leela, will this be cash or charge? And I started laughing, you know. I said, oh, boy, could I load up my car? Could I go back to Utah with Jess? Oh, boy. And he said, are you yourself? And I started having my 20 fun. I said, oh, yes, I'm myself. I said, my name's Lita, and I'm from Utah. He thought that Leela had gone daft. So I quickly reached for my IDs, and I spread them out on his counter, and I said, it says right here, Salt Lake City. Spell it, L-E-E-T-A. He said, you got to see this, you got to see this. He called all the help all around. They stood around in a circle. He says, you got to see it, folks. You can't believe it, you know. When I went back home, Leela said, well, I thought you were down the tube. They took me for you. What do you mean, you know? But that all changed when the booze storms called. And Leela's and my joys turned to sorrows. We couldn't handle it. We didn't know what to do. And each one of us knew that each one of us were in the deepest of trouble. It wasn't all booze. Leela spoke and wrote in the fast lanes of Kansas City area, Kansas and Missouri, as a civil rights leader. I don't want to get into that. That's controversial, but she was too. And sometimes she was a target for threats, terrible threats, from outside her home. So I don't want to lay it all onto booze. But the tensions build up within her home too, as Paul would come home, his drinking terribly increased. And as time wore on, there was abuse. And living with an alcoholic was too much for her. And her health and her spirits broke, and she wasn't even 50 years old. But the last time I saw Leela was 14 years ago. And we sat holding hands, mute with sorrow. And finally she said, Twinny, strong drink is raging. We'll meet in a happier world. And 2 weeks later, Leela rose at sunup and found a pool of blood and died of a cerebral hemorrhage. And Paul found her late that night after a round of drinks. And when he called me, I said, well, you killed her. Whatever happened to to judge not, lest thou be judged. And my fourth step revealed, too, that as my husband drank and partied during my grief, I called him Nero, who fiddled while Rome burned. And I gave my own self as much justice as would a lynch mob. And when I began to admit to God, to myself and to another person, the exact nature of my judgments, an Al-Anon friend said to me, "Well, for Pete's sake, Lita, those drinkers weren't having that much fun." So I am very grateful to you AAs who share so honestly, and of course has helped me see the friend's wisdom. And gradually with God's help and through all your compassion, acceptance dawned. And then I could release my twin to God and turn to a new life, and things got better. They got so much better. And then about 3 years later, news of another casualty stunned me. For weeks I worked in slow motion, almost mute again with guilt and grief, and finally I ran and owned out. And here we come again to our Al-Anon tools, our beautiful Al-Anon tools. They said one way to discover your problem's real nature is to write it out in detail. So I got up one morning and I shoved that old horse back from the dining room table one more time, and I wrote a letter to the forum, Al-Anon's magazine. And in part, my letter read, "Last fall, I called my kin sister long distance after I'd had a distressing letter from her describing drinking problems in her family. 'You need Al-Anon,' I said, 'go.' 'Oh, that's what all my friends say down here,' she said. 'That's out.' So for the next few weeks, I did nothing. And finally, I wrote my sister saying we did not tell her enough how much we loved her and that I was flying down to try and help her. The day my letter arrived, unopened, my sister died by her own hand. And now here in this own city, my one surviving sister, a problem drinker, calls in the middle of the night to threaten suicide. And now that I've told you the worst in contrast, here's the very best. My three adult children and my nieces and my nephews call me from all over the country. And not knowing what to say, I just sigh and I quote snatches of Al-Anon that pop into my stunned brain. And through applying Al-Anon, rich and meaningful relationships have developed between us these past months. Still, this problem comes over me, how helpless I was, and I still am, to aid those nearest and dearest to me." The forum published my letter, and the readers' replies shared from all over this continent. And common comments taught me to tell your loved ones that you care. Still, you cannot be responsible for another's life, no matter how near or how dear. After this, the unspeakable became speakable and the unbearable bearable. And a bonus was that my son Joe Smiles, my Alateen son, met mine as he read the letters. And Joe said, "Mom, this is a miracle." And my surviving sister Sarah did not kill herself. She quit drinking a few years later when she discovered that cancer would kill her in a few months. She herself chose to live these last days sober and to go to God when he chose. And our families worked with the hospice people who helped the dying enjoy life one day at a time. But Al-Anon especially helped me to enjoy my true sister after all these years before I had to release her. And the week before she died, Ed Yates, a TV commentator from Salt Lake, went out and filmed a documentary of our families as we helped our sister to die. And he said in the film, in the documentary, he said, "Sarah is the most remarkable woman. She can laugh in the jaws of death." You know, our family could choose to give Sister Sarah a good send-off. But it wasn't so with my twin's oldest son, Paul Jr. After law school, he used and then he pushed cocaine. And we didn't see much of Paul Jr. for 5 years. Although his sister, also named Sarah, caught glimpses of her handsome brother. His brown curls bounced and his hazel eyes sparkled as he drove his Mercedes-Benz all around Kansas City in between trips to such exotic places like Pakistan and India. Whatever for, we ask. Then one night, after return from India, Paul fell very ill. He called his brother in Texas, but by the time help came, Leela's son had died alone, just like her. And without question, drugs killed him. Although stunned, our family still shared richly. And a part of my fearless inventory, my children, I guess except my mother was a history teacher, I don't know, they want to know way back when. And they ask, and a part of my inventory was to share with them, for instance, that my father's first wife died screaming from morphine withdrawal while he served the combat wounded in France during World War I. She was a beautiful registered nurse, and she caught the deadly flu virus when morphine was rationed. After Paul Jr.'s death, his sister Sarah, then a young mother and a business executive, listened intently back in the Middle West as an Alateen leader spoke in a PTA meeting. Comments. And Sarah stood up and for the first time ever outside of the family said, well, when I was a teen, my dad was a corporation president who hit my ill mother during his drunken rages. And the Alateen leader whirled around and he threw up his hands and he said, what a shitty way to grow up. Soon after, Sarah joined Al-Anon. And now she tells us, oh, be nice to Papa. Be nice to Papa. Another miracle unfolded when Joe burst into my kitchen one Christmas morning just a few years ago. As we shared, Joe told how this college student used cocaine and lost his ability to concentrate. My son then said, Chris killed himself this morning. He commented that he hadn't seen much of his friends who used the past few years. They cut me out when I refused. So Joe turned down rides in flashy cars, soaks in hot tubs, you know, to work as a cook in these family restaurants all the way through high school. I had to ask why. He said, well, I used to stand stirring the oatmeal and list my choices. The Alateens, they listed my choices too. So when the time came, I chose. It was no big deal. Today, among my nieces and nephews, I count several young AAs and several Al-Anons. A few others, including my own children, may be out there qualifying. I just don't know. So it helps to take only my own inventory and then detach from love. But let me tell you, it also helps to know that you all are out there and that you're responsible and the hand of AA will be there if called. For that, I am so very grateful. You alcoholics get sick and tired, you know. Well, our family got sick and tired of burying people. And we don't want to do that anymore. And we do share more family strengths now. And this new generation is so exciting. And family strengths accrue among nurses, teachers, business people, and writers. We also have one lady dentist, a doctor, an architect. I'm especially appreciative of the lawyer. Perhaps it's just like, you know, that biblical woman that had a whole sack full of coins and she lost one. She goes all over the place looking for that one coin she lost. Well, the lawyer Henry, he's my sister Sarah's oldest son, and he spent time, I love this name, in the Blue Earth County Jail in Minnesota for drug pushing. And as far as I know, he's straight now and a young lawyer, and I'm especially appreciative that he came through it. So the past 5 years, it's just an Al-Anon miracle. If I'm not rushing off to an Al-Anon meeting, I'm rushing off to greet my loved ones at dinners and weddings rather than funerals. And our clan, we've got so many pebbles in that pond, and now they're kind of collecting those ripples into a wave. And I don't want to put on airs. We're still recovering from family trauma. Recently, my oldest son shared that he suffers from depression. So he asked me to go down to County Mental Health and share in his therapy, and I'm doing that now. The young man said, Mom, there's a wall between us of my own making. I want to rebuild. But I did my part to shoot up those walls, too. So I'm rebuilding, too, with my oldest son. And my twin's oldest daughter recently visited me. You know, she's a linguist. She talks fluently in French, German, and Spanish. And she's a school administrator over in Europe. And she's now studying for a PhD. But when she was talking to me about her dear mama, she could barely talk. We got to Europe for 2 or 3 days, and her big question was, I want to be nice to Papa before he dies. So now she learns from Al-Anon, too. So here you see a whole cluster of families, over a dozen, rising from my childhood family and from families where there was heavy drinking before my families married into them. Where before we all felt isolated and alone, and some of us even died alone, and now we're all rebuilding. There is simply no way to express gratitude for this. You just have to take my word for it. And as for me, the soul, and I spell that S-O-U-L, survivor of that second generation, I now view my losses as gifts, God's gifts of enlightenment. And thanks to Al-Anon, I'm still in those meetings. I'm still training those three little monkeys for the three legs of Al-Anon Triangle, recovery, unity, and service. And as I so labor, solutions unfold that I never dreamed possible. I will close on another note of twin fun. For example, when I released my twin to God, I assumed that spelled the end of 20 fun. And then last year, Lita, my oldest daughter, called me and she said, Mother, I'm pregnant again, and surprise, this time there's two babies. So now this twin grandmother enjoys the most beautiful twin granddaughters, and I'm going to have 20 fun all over again. And I'm free. Free at last to enjoy these miracles that my higher power gives me. Because you have the courage to still care and to share with me. And sharing with you here tonight doubles my joys and cuts my griefs in half. And here I receive life's most precious gift, my own true self. While I strive to thine own self be true. And with God's help in our 12 steps, I'll be worthy of your faith in me. And especially when this time I strive to enable right. I thank you for listening. I love you, and God bless you.
Well, I get to sing Work Again or not? I grew up in Kansas. One advantage we had over the other states, we didn't have to wait for the bars to close on election day. Bootlegger was open all the time. Nobody has anything to do with it or not, but a young boy, when I was in the seventh grade, I'd stand out playing softball on recess and stand down the third baseline, not doing anything, just trying to fit in. Young guy that was up to bat lost control and threw the bat and hit me in the mouth. And when I came to, I had 50 stitches in my mouth. And I wasn't doing anything. I was just trying to fit in and enjoy the game and everything. Now as I look back, that must be kind of like Alateen experiences. Every now and again getting hit in the mouth while you're trying to fit in and live. I don't envy those young people. I don't envy my own children for the experiences I gave to them. But our next speaker is an Alateen, Jerry Kay from Springville.
Hi, my name is Jerry, and I'm a grateful Alateen.
Hi, Jerry.
Boy, this is just like my dad said it would be. 300 to 400 people. Well, I guess I'll start from the beginning. When my dad sobered up, I was 5 years old. I never knew what it was like to have an alcoholic father. But I can say one thing right now. I am grateful that he found AA, because if he wouldn't have, he probably, and I probably, would not be here right now. But when my dad stopped drinking, it was January 1st, New Year's, and my mother had just gotten home from a Al-Anon New Year's Eve party, and he was sitting in front of the TV with a beer in his hand, and she walked in the door, and he stood up, threw his beer in the fire, and said he cannot handle this anymore. And my mom knew exactly where to take him. And she took him to a wonderful person and now is his sponsor and has been for the past 10 years, which is in California. And now, since we live in Utah, I started in Alateen when I was 10 and a half years old in Beaver, Utah, and we have my old sponsor. I don't know if he's out there or not, but he was here earlier. And him and I got to talking, and it brought back some pretty good memories. And I know if it wasn't without the program, that my life would just be in shambles right now. Because if you knew me from now, a year ago, you would not understand what I've been through. But there was a choice about a half a year ago that came before me that I'd either have to straighten up or else I'd have to go to youth home. And at that time, I decided to take step 5, which says we admitted to ourselves, to God, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And those three people were me, my mother, and my probation officer. And there's a slogan that goes, one day at a time, which, in my own words, I prefer to say one problem at a time. And I can take one problem, such as stealing, take care of it, get it out of the way, and then move on to another problem. And right now, I've gone through 3 or 4 different problems in my life, and I'm working on the 5th. And I know that there was one time that my dad got real upset because he didn't like the way we were acting and everything. And he got all upset at us, and he left. And 2 or 3 hours later, he came back, called us all in the front room, we sat down, and he goes, "It's because of you, I just almost lost my soberism." And my mom stood up and said, "Wait a minute, that the program teaches you that you can blame nobody else but yourself for your drinking." And there's a lot of things that I didn't know when I was 5 that I do know now. And that thank God for the program and for the wonderful parents that I have, and that they found the program also. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.